excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
If we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving.
Welcome to this Minnesota edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford, reporting to you on the road home from the Minnesota game. Which, of course, in this instance means from my living room to my family room, as it's the one game this year I wasn't able to travel to in person. Well, I hope everyone took their blood pressure medication before this game, or at least before the second quarter. The Bears started out so well, up 14-0, and then watched it just slowly fade away till by the start of the fourth quarter it was tied at 21. I'm going to start with the positives, and maybe I'll do what an old professor of mine used to call the compliment sandwich. Because in the end, this is a win, and you can't get too upset when you go on the road, beat a BCS conference team on the road, and, you know, let's focus on that positive. There's plenty of times the Bears haven't done that in recent years. So the positives are, one, they came out of the chute fast. I have a feeling that Tedford is never going to travel to an early morning again on Friday. That probably seals the deal for him. This team came right out of the chute, did a great job, and every reason to believe that the Thursday flight had at least something to do with that. So, good to see Tedford willing to make changes. You know, one of the things I really like about him is his confidence and his determination and his belief in his systems. But the downside of that is sometimes he can be a bit stubborn. But in this case, he was willing to try something different. And the result, I mean, it is debatable whether it really helped. But the result was good for the Bears to travel on Thursday. So they came out of the chute fast. They got up 14-0. And the defense, through pretty much the whole first half, right up till the final minute and a half, played exceptionally well. The one touchdown they got before that was when they were given the ball right around midfield, took a few plays to get a little bit further downfield, but really didn't make any substantial progress, and then launched a fade route into the corner, where Decker, who, let's give him all kinds of credit, he's a great receiver, came down with the ball. And I'll come back in my criticisms part to that touchdown, but for now I'll just leave it at, it was a really good throw and a tough spot for the defense to cover, and they got a touchdown. So even in that play, the Bears did reasonably well, and they did exceptionally well for the whole rest of the half. And actually, in the big picture, you go back to the second half, the Bears only gave up 7 points in the second half. So, really, the defense did well. 21's a little bit more than I would have hoped they would have given up here, but particularly considering what the special teams were forcing them to work with, I think they did exceptionally well. So, we have a strong performance by the defense for almost the entire game, with one exception that I'll get back to. We have an offense that comes out fast, does pretty well to begin the game, and then, and here's the other key part, when the chips were down and it was tied 21-0, they responded with 2 touchdowns in a row. Now, there was a set of short possessions in between the Minnesota touchdown and to tie the game and the Bears running off 2 touchdowns, but, I mean, you can't expect that every possession is going to be a good one, and that one possession, it seemed like the Bears were slowly getting their act back in gear. So, I mean, there's a lot of positives there. And the determination of the team, I think, when the chips were down, is an important thing. And it's very good that after 2 wins that were too easy, almost, that they saw a little bit of controversy and adversity, more appropriately, that they needed to overcome. But now to the negatives. And I'm going to start with the thing that really has nothing to do with the Bears, And the Bears should never use an excuse but the refereeing. And if you go back and look through, excuse me for my voice, throughout its history, and you go look at my previous blog before that, you will find that there are very few times I criticize the refs. I really don't think it's a wise thing to do. But the calling today was atrocious. I mean, I can't even explain how bad it was. It just was horrible. They were calling pass interferences that weren't pass interference. They were not seeing bobbled balls. In fact, I'll start with that one. I guarantee you Minnesota's first touchdown was not a touchdown by the rule book. In fact, I'm going to do a post on it later this weekend. He caught the ball, got a foot down, and then bobbled it as he fell out of bounds due to the big hit by Ezef, I believe it was. That's not a catch. If you catch the ball and you've got your hand over the tip of it, and then as you fall to the ground, it goes rumbling around and you have to use both hands to go up and get it up on your shoulder, if you're still in bounds, that's a catch. But if you're out of bounds when that happens, it's not a catch. And it's just ridiculous that was not looked, because it was, I'm fine with the refs on the field missing that, because it looked pretty good when he caught it. But the replay booth should have seen it. It was immediately obvious that that was the case. And they should know the rule book well enough to know that that was an incomplete pass. What they were probably doing was spending all their time trying to decide if he had crossed the pylon, which that he may have done. It was close, but the real thing was he didn't catch the ball. You gotta have a solid grasp on the ball the entire time, and if it bobbles out while you're falling to the ground, that's not a catch. But we had the holding call on Tepper, which I can't even see where they would argue that that was holding. They had the pass interference on Hagan, I believe it was, where he practically didn't even touch the guy. And I can actually kind of see why that one was called, because it looked like the Decker's shoulders were turned. But it was Decker who turned them to go after the ball, and the ref should see that. Probably the second most glaring call of the day was that, as my brother was calling it, the phantom fair catch. I mean, they played it like he put up his hand for the fair catch. But the ball got in there, he caught the ball, and then Sofelli nails him with his head up and actually brings his arm in front of him. Now, his helmet kind of hit simultaneously with his arm, but he was clearly not trying to spear him and had given him a chance to catch the ball. That was a perfectly legal play, and I'll give them just a minor half credit on the helmet-to-helmet contact, because it was there, it just wasn't bad, and he was trying to avoid it. And there were plenty of other opportunities to call a helmet-to-helmet that they didn't call, so they just blew that. The ball was there, he caught it, so Felly nailed him. It's that simple. And if they had done a fair catch, then that would have been the right call. But other than that, that was perfectly legal. And so when you just add all these pieces up, it's really frustrating, and I'm sure it frustrated the players. And kudos to them to at least eventually getting back on track and doing the right thing. But now the actual important stuff to be critical about. The Bears got into a really bad funk starting midway through the second quarter, and their biggest mistake that started it all was with 2:34 left in the half, pinned close to their own goal line. They started at the Cal 8. And boy, isn't this great. I can give you exact figures and stuff because I got my computer in front of me. We're on the actual road home. I don't. they went for three runs that were not very effective. And I get it on first down. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, running on first down is a very reasonable play call. But they really should have opened things up and tried more fly sweeps or something like that on second and third down, as opposed to just pounding it up the middle. And that gave Minnesota the ball back with a minute left, and thanks to the stupid penalty, it was at the Cal 40. And then the defense, and see, here's, I think, the real problem with playing over-conservative, and what sometimes people forget when they're talking about over-conservative play. And to be clear, I'm generally one who doesn't want to see the team go hog wild. But when you're over-conservative, your players start playing softer and conservative's not the right word, weaker. And so, actually, one of the most easy possessions for the Gophers was that one after Cal had pretty much already phoned in the end of the half. And Hagan, I don't know what he was thinking on that pass to Decker in the corner. I mean, he bit like it was a run play, but there was no play action. So I really don't get what went on there. And that's the risk of going really conservative and kind of saying the half is over. That mindset gets into the players' heads. And so the defense that doesn't have a horrible task to do, I mean, you know, 1 minute left on the Cal 40, you should hold them to a field goal for sure. Or it should be possible to hold them to a field goal, but when you give up a two-play drive, it shows that those players were already working in their minds on getting into the locker room and were not focused on slowing them down. And then in the second half, the thing that was just unbelievable, and it's amazing how little they scored considering how effective it was why were they not putting somebody on Decker? And particularly, why wasn't it Sid? I mean, Hagan was on him three-quarters of the time. No, send Sid with Decker. Put your best corner, particularly since Hagan was having a lot of trouble with him, and Sid wouldn't. And didn't. And you look at all the plays where Decker went big, they were either in an indiscriminate zone where he was able to just find the holes in the zone and make the big plays, or it was in a more controlled zone where Hagan was on him. But he never burned Sid. And I just don't get it. I mean, really, look at how ineffective they were once he went to the sideline at the very end. I mean, they looked like they might actually march it down the field and get a touchdown, and the Bears would have recovered the onside kick, and the game would have been over anyway, but they weren't able to do that. Once he's on the sideline getting his tape cut off because he hurt his ankle, they stopped right in their tracks. And it's not because the rest of the team isn't capable. It's because the quarterback is single-minded. He was just looking for Decker. And I think perhaps the mistake that the Cal defense makes and Bob Gregory makes is we don't play like that. And Pac-10 teams in general don't play like that. They don't pick on a receiver. They don't throw solely that receiver. They throw where it's open. And I think they assume other teams are as sophisticated and as advanced as they are, as the Bears are, and as are most of the Bears' opponents in the Pac-10. But many of them are just not that way, and you need to be more dynamic about willing to accept that and more dynamic about changing your defensive game plan to adjust for that. Because literally, without Decker, nobody's hearts would have been beating fast and like mine was. And I haven't really had a good chance to look at it and analyze it, but I definitely feel in my mind that there was something wrong with the Cal offense there through the late second quarter and the third quarter. And I can't quite put my mind around what it was. It wasn't that they weren't handing it off to Best. I mean, because definitely the defense was triggering on that. And I didn't see a whole lot of bad particular plays by Riley. So it's a little bit more subtle than that, what was going wrong. But you just felt like something wasn't quite working when things were working so well early in the game. And perhaps that's just it. They settled down too much. They went to conventional game planning and play calling. Whereas one of the things I've really liked about Ludwig so far this year is he opens up the playbook. He likes different things, minus the halfback pass to start the game, which how many times have we done that in the last few years? I'm pretty sure opponents are ready for it. But minus that, you know, all these sweeps and these fake sweeps and these screen passes and these passes downfield and these runs up the middle by Best, around the edge by Best, they really were being very, very diverse. Whereas I think, and so I'm kind of talking myself into this, but I think what it was is we got into that mid-second quarter and we were cruising. The play calling got more conservative and more conventional, and it wasn't until the fourth quarter that they opened things back up again. And that's, I think, Tedford's conservative nature, but perhaps they went too far with that in this game. So definitely there's some negatives here. There's things that are very frustrating. And boy, did the bounces and the refs and everything just not go the Bears' way, which I think leads me back into the end of my compliment sandwich, is the Bears rose to the occasion. The refs weren't going their way. The bounces weren't going their way. The breaks weren't going their way. Everything was not going well, but they held in. They got a little bit antsy and jumpy, particularly in the third quarter, but they recentered themselves, they recommitted themselves to the game, and they won. And that's a very good sign. And if there's something that I'm going to take away this game in a positive, beyond what I already knew about the team, is the character of this team, I think, showed something today. They didn't show being perfect. They're going to have to play a cleaner game against Oregon on the road and UCLA on the road than they did today if they want to keep winning their road games. But they had some heart. They had some character. They didn't phone it in. They got it back and won. What in the end, you know, when people are just looking at the scores, 35-21 is a reasonably convincing win. No one's going to look at that game just based on the score and say, oh, this team doesn't deserve to be number 8. You know, there might be some people who look at it more in depth and decide that, but just based on the score, you'll say, yeah, all right, solid win over a Big Ten team that's at least middle of the pack. Okay, fine. They get to keep on the rankings escalator. And so there's some heart in this team. There's some determination on this team. And we've seen it on the defense, and we saw it some more on the offense today. And that's what makes me feel good about this victory in the end, is this determination, this desire to win, this getting it back together. The game really should not have been that close. I think based on talent, that was a 42-10 win. I mean, let's look at some yardage here for crying out loud. I mean, the Bears had 417 yards to the Gophers 266. They only had 35 rushing yards, and their 231 passing was fully half of that was to Decker, who got 8 catches. I mean, the Bears just dominated that game. They had far more first downs. They had balance in first downs. They had very good first down conversions. I mean, 7 for 15. You know, it's just under 50%. That's the type of number you want. Versus 4 for 12 for the Gophers. Riley threw the ball well. I mean, just if you look at it from a statistical standpoint, the Bears just blew the door wide open. And the one area that they didn't really lead the game was in penalties, where 4 for 45, which in the big picture, that's not bad. You know, hard to argue with that. But the Bears didn't lose a fumble. They didn't throw an interception. Only sacked twice, which is a little bit worse than Tedford likes. He likes to see that number. It basically won a game. But they had 3 interceptions. 2 of them were garbage interceptions. Let's not get too carried away there. But still, 3 interceptions. 1 fumble recovery. It's interesting that the punt, the muffed punt where the Cal Bear player touched it and didn't get out of the way, it doesn't count as a fumble, but it doesn't apparently on the statistics. But that was really the one turnover for the Bears, and that it's both a tough one, and they need to do it better. And maybe going back into my negatives, special teams. Tavecchio, I really like the kid. I really think he's a quality kid who can kick the ball deep, and he worked so hard in the offseason, but something psychological is keeping him from doing what he needs to do. And D'Amato got a couple of opportunities and had one that actually went into the end zone, a great kick, probably a little risky, went right to the edge, but a touchback. When's the last time we've seen one of those? And he also had a squib kick, which didn't tell us much. I think there was one other. I can't remember where it went, but I think D'Amato should keep doing it because Tavecchio isn't doing it, and we really need to see that consistency. And D'Amato is going to need an opportunity to get more and more consistent by doing it more and more often. But just special teams as a whole. I mean, you've got the punt where it hits our guy. You've got the returns after the short kickoffs, which, you know, we've had enough short kickoffs. Now the team needs to be ready to tighten up and give them the ball at the 30, not the 45. And it's, you know, I actually talked to Alomar. He called into the Sacramento Grid Club. So, you know, I heard him speak. And he's another guy I want to like. He seems like a really quality guy. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something going on schematically where he's not getting enough time at practice, or maybe he just really isn't, you know, that great of a special teams coach. But this team is not getting it done on special teams. And D'Amato needs to be in there on kickoffs. Let the guy that we knew was good enough that we gave him a scholarship. It's very rare for a high school kid to get a kicking scholarship. So it's time to let him start kicking the ball. And then the coverage needs to get better as well. Now, when we're receiving the ball, we're doing fine. When we're punting the ball because of anger, we're doing fine. And we're receiving punts, we're doing okay. Sid hasn't really... We've had such a strong tradition here of great punt returners that it's a little unfair to Sid. And the thing to remember is you want a defensive guy as your punt returner, not somebody from the offense. The reason for that is they're already on the field, and you want to be able to switch really quickly between punt mode and defend on fourth down mode. So that's why you're seeing corners very frequently and safeties very frequently being punt returners. Because then they get off the field and they can take a rest. Whereas if you use your star wide receiver and he has a big run back, just like Javid Best often isn't in the first play of the game after a kickoff return, that wide receiver is not going to be on the field after a big punt return. So there's a definite benefit to using your corner or safety for punt returns. But we just got to get those kickoffs better, and it's time to switch to D'Amato. Tavecchio has had enough time to get his act in gear, and maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, maybe when we're facing Washington State, if Tavecchio shows a lot of consistency in practice and he's still out kicking D'Amato, then you give him another shot during the game to prove it. But for right now, at least as far as what I was seeing, D'Amato is capable of kicking it just as far and is also seems to be more consistent, although it's on a very small sample size. But let's not overlook the positives here. The Bears won on the road against a BCS team. We're now up to 3-3. We are 6-0 versus the Big Ten in the Tedford era. And just as a statement, unless it's a single season statistic, if I'm looking at past records, I almost entirely look at the Tedford era. I mean, what value is there in looking behind that? Even when it's a positive statistic, you know, it's just an entirely different time in Cal football, and there's no reason of including those statistics in there, whether or not they help what you're trying to say. So if you hear statistics about how the Bears have done, I'm almost always, unless I explicitly state otherwise, looking at the Tedford era. And yet again, another good statistic, I don't remember the exact numbers here, but the Bears are very good at winning non-conference games, and this is another year where we're 3-0, and, you know, God help us if we're up against this, but we only need 3 more wins. We can go 3-6 in Pac-10 play and be bowl eligible. And that, don't underestimate that. Don't underestimate what the non-conference wins do for our ranking and for the Pac-10's reputation in the country. Don't underestimate how much it does for the confidence of the team. So all of these things are good, and then we get the extra added bonus of a game that in the end wasn't that close, but did test the Bears' mettle and did force them to dig deep and find the heart and go back and win the game. And that's a great thing when you've got teams like Oregon or USC in front of you on the schedule. And so in the end, I think we need to be positive about this. The special teams is an area maybe where some work needs to be done. The other areas I don't think are too concerning in the big picture. And this is a team that I think is ready to go into Autzen and have a shot at winning that game, a very good shot. And we'll see today just how good Oregon is, or at least have some insight into that, playing Utah. Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the On the Road Home podcast. Next week, you'll have the benefit of an On the Road Home podcast that is not only actually on the road, but in addition, will be from a road game where I'm covering it for BearTerritory.net. So I'll have player quotes, player and coaching quotes in the podcast itself. So look forward to that. Of course, you're going to have a BearTerritory.net and hopefully an Excuse Me for My Voice podcast midweek as well. So thank you for listening and look forward to those.
On the road again. On the road again.